Now, when you ask about Topo 2, I think clearly you're on the edge of something that's very new. I think scientifically it makes good sense. I don't think we're there yet to use that as a way of making our choices because we haven't yet enough data to show that this will actually make a difference in outcome. It's sort of like the Oncotype DX. It's the same thing. It makes sense, and I assume that most people are beginning to use it on some patients, but very few people are using it on all patients. And on the other hand, I believe that ER and HER2 are now being used on almost all patients because there's a very clear relationship between the specific therapy in each case and the prognostic / predictive factor.
I want to pick up on a couple of these issues, both ER as well as TOPA2, and whether or not, you know, just to elaborate a little bit more about how you think ER can be used clinically or might be used clinically in decisions about chemotherapy. I guess we really haven't had very good predictors of response to chemotherapy. And TOPO2, in terms of anthracyclines, is sort of out on the table. There were a couple papers presented at ASCO looking at TOPO2. What's your take right now on sort of what the data show at this point and where you think it's heading?
I think on TOPO2, the evidence is pretty clear that, A, it scientifically makes sense. It's something that we began talking about more than a decade ago. It was particularly interesting because TOPO2 is on the same chromosome as HER2. And remember the early papers when we thought there was a correlation between the use of doxorubicin and HER2? I don't think that's really held up. Certainly you saw this year that when Danny Hayes presented the data from 9344, we didn't see a correlation between HER2 expression and doxorubicin dose. And we predicted in the earlier study we had conducted, this was the CAF dose study that CLGB conducted in the mid-80s, that HER2 predicted for the patients who were going to get a benefit from the higher CAF dose.
On the other hand, you know, Kathy Pritchard published a paper in the New England Journal this spring looking at HER2 and the CEF versus CMF, and I mean, my read on that was it was correlated with benefit from anthracyclines.
Again, you're using three drugs, and it's hard to separate out that it's very specific for the anthracyclines. In the case of the study where I think people listening to these things must get confused by all the numbers. You know, the groupies use all the numbers, but the protocol 9344, which is the first study in which we looked at four cycles of CA and then randomized to Taxol or no Taxol. It's sometimes forgotten that that study was designed initially to look at the dose of adriamycin, and that was the only thing we changed. So in the first four cycles, patients got one of three different doses of adriamycin, but we did not change the dose of cyclophosphamide. Remember, the NSABP had previously done studies where they changed the dose of cyclophosphamide, but not the dose of adriamycin. And so that became kind of a neat, clean test of the issue of adriamycin. So, yes, Kathy Pritchard got the same results with CEF as we'd earlier gotten with CAF, and those studies did match. But in both those cases, we were not looking at the anthracycline quite specifically. And when we looked at the anthracycline very specifically, we only changed the adriamycin dose and not the cyclophosphamide dose. We got no evidence of benefit from escalating the dose from 60 to 75 to 90 per meter squared. And then this year at ASCO, Dan Hayes showed that if you looked at the HER2 positive and the HER2 negatives independently, there was no difference. In other words, there was no greater benefit for escalating Adria dose in those patients that overexpressed HER2 than in those patients that did not overexpress HER2. So HER2 was not predictive. But that earlier group of studies, we thought it was predictive, specifically for anthracyclines. And we hypothesized that was probably true because the overexpression of HER2 was probably associated with the overexpression of TOPO2 because they're located very close together on the chromosome.
If the TOPO2 assay were available to a clinician or if for some reason a patient had a TOPO2 assay, do you think it would be reasonable to consider that in deciding, A, whether or not to use an anthracycline or not in a patient who is HER2 negative, or B, whether or not to use an anthracycline in someone who is HER2 positive?
I think that the anthracyclines are so powerful and so valuable for the treatment of breast cancer that I would be very hesitant to leave out Adriamycin until the data were very compelling that there was a group that received no benefit. It's sort of the same as the way we function as physicians with ER. We know that patients who are ER positive derive less benefit from chemotherapy than those who are ER negative. But it's not an all or none phenomenon. And there's still room for clinical judgment. Where do you draw the line? And we know that patients will undergo the inconvenience of chemotherapy even when they have a fairly good prognosis, even when the benefit is fairly marginal. So I think the same thing applies here. When are you comfortable enough to say that I'm going to leave out what is still really the single most powerful drug? As good as the taxanes are, and I'm very enthusiastic about the taxanes, I don't believe that they are any better than, and maybe they're not quite as good as, the anthracyclines in the treatment of breast cancer.